again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we pull out the gloriously new painted Big Red Bus. New tires, new carburetor, new muffler. Everything looks beautiful. And my co-pilot, the great one, Doug Tonis, is sitting next to me as we head out into the great unknown. How you doing, brother?
Doing very well. Exciting. Fun NBA playoffs. Game 7 going on right now. Another one tomorrow.
Yeah, this is a great time of year, and just I've enjoyed these conference finals immensely, even though there have been a few blowouts. I think game 5 more than made up for it for Houston and Golden State, and LeBron's performance in game 6 was just, you know, otherworldly. And I know there's haters out there who dislike the guy, but he's the second best player I've ever seen. I think people should try to appreciate, enjoy greatness, and that absolutely was an effort that kind of defies comprehension.
Yeah, I love watching LeBron, and I agree with you. LeBron is the second best player I've ever seen as well. And the media makes it really hard for me to appreciate LeBron every time I have to read one of these LeBron is better than Michael Jordan stories, where they try and come up with some bizarre metrics to prove that LeBron is better. Or, you know, they look at the points and his run in his playoff and talk about how he's better. And I'm just, you know, I have a hard time. Like, he's doing great, but he plowed through, like, two teams that weren't too exciting. And if he makes it through a Boston team missing his two best players, or their two best players, and they talk about how Cleveland is missing Kevin Love, and it's like we've forgotten that Boston is missing Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, and, you know, they're there with their other players, and the story is how Kevin Love is gone for one game. You know, it's just a LeBron-slanted media world, and sometimes that makes it hard for me to appreciate how great he is. But as soon as I tune all that stuff out and just watch him play, he truly is amazing.
Yeah, I know. You can't say – I laugh, too, when I hear these arguments now. You know, it's like – you can't erase what happened in 2011. He had a superior team, and he was outplayed by Dirk Nowitzki in the finals, and that never happened to Michael. That's on his resume. You can't wash it away. And for that reason alone, unless he ends up winning 7 more championships, four more, it's not even an argument. You know, you can't even have the discussion because he lost a title with clearly a better team, and he was outplayed by another superstar. So that happened, And, you know, unfortunately, you can't wipe that away. But what he's doing now, you got to love it. You got to be impressed by it and recognize greatness. But I agree with you. Some of these people just make me nauseous with these stupid arguments. And it's really sad in a way. But then you realize that a lot of these people didn't even see Michael play. You know, a lot of these people have no memory of seeing him out there. So it kind of makes sense, too. I mean, if you didn't get a chance to witness Michael Jordan, you really have no idea how great he was and how far ahead he was over everyone else he played against.
It's also just the generation thing, right? It's, you know, every generation wants to pump up whoever the new guy is, and that will always be the case. I'm sure when Michael Jordan was just doing all his amazing stuff, there were people out there saying, "Well, these people talking about how great Michael Jordan was never watched Will Chamberlain play."
Right.
So, you know, yeah. I get it, and it's fine, but it's just a sign that we're old, I think.
Agreed. You know, I had a tweet today, Doug. I'd like to get your comment on it before we get into the topics at hand. I said a very average Bucks team and a slightly better Indiana team pushed the Celtics and Cavs to a first-round Game 7. The delta between the best in the East and the worst has never been smaller. If the Bulls hit with this number 7 pick again, we'll be a contender by 2020, and possibly even if we miss. Am I wrong?
Yes.
Okay. All right. On to the next topic.
I mean, it depends really how big they hit, doesn't it? I mean, if they miss, you know, you've got a lot of question marks on this team. And it just depends. You know, Chris Dunn needs to get a lot better. Zach LaVine needs to get a lot better. Lauri Markkanen needs to get a lot better. The odds of LaVine and Dunn both getting a lot better, given their current age and career progression, are not super high. I mean, they're just not. I liked what I saw about them. I have some hope, but they're not super high. Lowry clearly has a high ceiling and a very good chance of being extremely, extremely good. But so I think they really need to hit on this pick. Or they need to be very aggressive in turning over some of these other guys for different assets and hit in some other ways in order for that to happen. But there's definitely scenarios. You know, they'll have lots of cap room too if you bring in a star and then Lowry hits and the seventh pick hits and Dunn and Levine become, you know, good. You know, you could definitely be there. But watching Boston right now without their two best guys, you know, it wouldn't be hard for me to see Boston really being a truly great team. Philadelphia is on the rise. If they stay healthy and they bring in a star player, which they have cap room to do, it would not be difficult to see them being a truly great team for a while either. So I think there's a chance for a couple of teams to really rise in the East and be pretty good. You know, it's not necessarily going to be like this year or next year where Philadelphia is too young and hasn't got that star from the cap space and Boston's missing two of their best guys.
Yeah, but I think, you know, I think it's just kind of there's an assumption out there that, oh, Boston's going to be fantastic, you know, going forward. And I love the way Brown has progressed. Tatum looks fantastic. Those two guys are great. But, you know, you don't have to look too far from Chicago to see, you know, two great players who were injured and never really approached what they once were. I mean, to me, the ceiling for Boston all depends on how Irving and Hayward come back from somewhat serious injuries. And, you know, as I said before, we're pretty familiar with players coming back and never hitting the ceiling again or approaching it. If those guys don't approach where they were, you know, I don't see Boston. I think Boston's going to be just as big of a disappointment as the 2010 to 2016 Bulls were under Tom Thibodeau.
That could be, but injury is one to come back from. So I don't think that'll be the case there. Kyrie Irving, who knows? That's a little bit dicier. He's had a variety of injuries throughout his career. Plays a style of play similar to Derrick Rose in the sense that he's flying all over the court, up in the air a lot. It's going to put a lot of pressure on his knees from all the landings. Has a lot of knee problems already, so I wouldn't be shocked if he's a guy who doesn't have a super long prime from here on out. But, you know, it could happen. I mean, it could happen, but if the Bulls are a contender, they're a contender for the East. Like, they're pretty far away from being the Warriors or the Rockets or the Spurs or whatever other elite team you want to name out there. You know, they're pretty far away from that. And even hitting on number seven, they're going to need to do that, and they're going to need a few years of experience and a bunch of other things to go well for that to happen. And, you know, I think we're too far away, baby steps here. Let's see some solid improvement. Let's see, you know, hit 40 wins next year, get to the playoffs. You know, then we can start talking about the growth potential going forward.
Yeah, I had an interesting conversation yesterday with our mutual friend, Mark Kay from Bulls HQ from Australia. And I was joking around about the holy number seven, you know, marking in number seven pick. Number seven this year are going to lead to title number seven. And he joked and countered, well, don't you mean a seven seed? And in retrospect, that was a pretty good line. But also, that's the floor and ceiling, right? I kind of view it like that. You know, seven titles, the ceiling, probably a seven seed's the floor. Do you concur?
If we can get a seven seed next year, I'll be pretty excited about it.
It'll
show, like, you know, with seven seed, with all guys who are like 25 and under as your core, I think you'd feel pretty happy about where you're going.
Amen. Amen. Speaking of the core, let's get in a little bit of information about Bobby Portis this week. Apparently, I didn't see this article. You saw an article where he's getting close on an extension, which I'm frankly shocked about.
I don't think the article saying he's close on an extension. He just said he felt positive, you know, about his situation with the Bulls and thought he could get something done this summer.
How do you feel about that?
And I think there's no way that happens. There's like a 0% chance we sign Bobby Portis. And the reason is not whether you like or dislike Bobby Portis, whether you think he should or shouldn't stay here. It's not even about that debate. It's the fact that Bobby Portis's cap number, because he was picked so deep in the draft next year, is $7 million. So if we sign him to anything over $7 million now in an extension, which clearly anything he agrees to is going to be over that amount, I think you'd agree.
Yes.
Then he will cost more against the cap when we're trying to lure free agents next year than if we just waited. Even if we ultimately pay him more next year, we will have less cap room than if we wait to do the contract next year. So there's a pretty big incentive for the Bulls from that perspective to maximize their cap space and not agree to something with Portis. I think they'd really have to get pretty fantastic value in their mind to give up that flexibility.
And what would that be? $8 million a year?
Yeah, I mean, I think around like 10 million a year, I would say I'd sign Bobby Portis.
Yeah, I think Bobby is a sixth man, seventh man off the bench. And I think he'll be that for the remainder of his career. He's not good enough defensively to warrant a starting spot, but I love his offense. I thought last year he had a very underrated, very solid season on the offensive end. The guy just doesn't have the physical tools to become a great defender. He just doesn't have the leaping ability or, rim defending ability to do that as a big man. And that's always going to, I think, limit him. But he was great last year, I thought, for, large swaths of the season offensively. And I do feel, though, a lot of these people that think, I should be getting 10 to 15. I mean, just look at Lou Williams' contract and look at the amount of teams that are going to be signing deals. I think we're going to all be shocked at the low amount that is offered for some significantly good players. I don't think Levine's going to get anything approaching what he wants. I don't think he's going to get an offer, period, from any other team besides the Bulls. So,
I'd agree with that.
yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens this offseason, and I'm already excited about it, with LeBron and all these big decisions, Chris Paul and some big decisions out there. But I think there's going to be a lot of surprise people in terms of, like a guy like Barton from Denver, how much they sign for when they're expecting, double digit, excuse me, 10 million or above, they'll get them for six, So we'll see. But I agree with you then. I wouldn't sign Bobby. I'd let him play out one more year, and then he'll be a restricted free agent at the end of next season, correct? Okay, so let's go back into, well, let's talk a little bit about Lauri Markkanen making the first team All-NBA rookie. Congratulations, fantastic season. Overall, I thought kind of an underrated part of the season was how well he played in the last month. I think in the last three wins the Bulls had, he averaged 24 minutes in each game. He played 24 minutes in each game, and he averaged, I think, 20 points and 7 rebounds. And just incredibly efficient play, shot over 50% from three. I thought he started to approach what I want to see from him on a consistent basis in that last month of the season. What's your comments on him making first team All-NBA? And hopefully, do you think this will be an impetus for him to maybe break out next year?
Well, you certainly hope at his age, he's at that prime period to have a big jump. Over the next 2 years is where we really should see him have, significant strides. Exciting that he made the team. I think what's kind of interesting as we talk about Lowry is the, maybe the top three pick in this draft, and we got him at seven, so we're very happy with that. And he's actually fifth in terms of the votes for the all-rookie team. Ben Simmons, who was obviously not available in this draft, was unanimous number one. So, obviously he's kind of out of that mix, which means, the voters put Lowry as the fourth best pick in the draft this year. And so whether you want to argue him versus Kuzma, who was the guy who was slightly ahead of him, I think it shows the Bulls really to get pretty good value, at least by this rookie season and confirmed by the voters. I'm excited about Lowry going forward. I know not as excited as you. I know you think he's going to be his can't miss superstar. It kind of reminds me a little bit of when Nikola Vucevic came out and had this strong early start to his career, and you thought, wow, this guy's really going to be the center of something at Orlando, and then nothing ever was really built around it. So I just hesitate a little bit on Lowry. Not that he's the same player as Vucevic, but we've seen that type of thing happen. Where guys can kind of have this hot start, and then it doesn't necessarily translate into a bigger thing. It was great, like you say, at the end of the month to see him play in that alpha role for his minutes out there because everyone else was out, so they just got him lots of shots and him really be successful in that role. At that point, though, everyone knew the Bulls were trying to lose, and so playing some not great teams and teams not taking him too seriously, and they were down by points. I don't know how much I take of it, but it was still great to see what he looked like in his brief period getting a high volume of looks, and hopefully against teams that are very motivated, and with Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine on the floor at the same time, he can continue that trend of being more of an alpha type player.
Yeah, I mean, I witnessed the game though against a Wizards team that was fighting for a playoff spot and positioning on April 1st, and that team was trying to win, and the Bulls were obviously trying to lose, and he played absolutely fantastic. I think we've kind of talked ad nauseum about this. I think he's got elite skills. I think there's a couple things I really like about Lauri Markkanen in that I think his elite skill is shooting, and he hasn't really approached the ceiling yet for that. Most players, very rarely do you ever see a player hit his career high as a 3-point shooter in the NBA in his rookie season and then decline. That usually never happens. So
Yeah, no one is expecting it. I think we all agree that Lowry would become a better shooter as his career progresses.
no doubt. And so, I mean, it's there's nothing but I think we are all in agreement that this kid's going to be a good to great player. It's just a matter of where he falls in that spectrum. And if he can make an all-star team in year three or maybe even next year, I mean, just that would be fantastic. But we'll see. There's a lot long ways to go. Let's talk a little bit about the I'd like to talk a little bit about the All-NBA team. I'm going to give you the first team, and I'd like your thoughts if there was anyone on here that kind of surprised you. At guard, James Harden. Forward, LeBron James. Center forward, Anthony Davis. Damian Lillard was guard, and Kevin Durant at forward.
I mean, without thinking about it too hard, one of those names has to stand out to you, doesn't it?
Yep.
I mean, LeBron James does not deserve to be a no, I'm just kidding.
Exactly.
Damian Lillard just doesn't strike me as a first team guy. Just off the cuff, without really digging into the stats too deeply, he doesn't strike me as the first team guy. Clearly, the other guys are on there for sure. I mean, there's a lot of good guards. Steph Curry didn't have the greatest year, so I kind of get that. Russell Westbrook, it's hard for me to say. I'd rather have Lillard over Westbrook, but I could see the case. When I think about it deeply, I think maybe they did get that right. Lillard is the next best guy, but Chris Paul maybe could be there. There's like a lot of really good guards. I don't know. What says to you? I mean, I'm sure you asked because Lillard is the guy you're picking on.
Well, it was ended. What I think does this whole process a disservice is it's really a regular season award. So I think we have a little bit of the memory of the disappointing exit of the Portland Trail Blazers in round one, kind of affects it. And I think you should announce this immediately after the season's over and maybe have a playoff award. Because Lillard, I thought, did have an excellent regular season, but they were so disappointed in the playoffs, it kind of mars the announcement. I do know this, Anthony Davis. So Harden and James got 100% first team votes. Some four morons gave Anthony Davis, he got 96%, 96 out of 100 votes. Four guys voted Anthony Davis on second team. I don't know who those four guys are, but they should be berated for about 5 hours, slapped and never allowed to go near an NBA court again. I don't know how you could possibly not vote Anthony Davis to the first team All NBA. It's like an it's a
It's
travesty.
got to be four guys in Philly who voted for Embiid, right?
Well, you may,
It's
you
got to be like four
probably.
beat writers in Philly, and that kind of thing happens. So I hear you, and I agree that Davis was deserving, but it's always the case in any type of vote where there's a huge number of voters that there's a couple guys who just like vote something ridiculous. It's
Yeah.
the same for like all the Hall of Fame voting. There'll be some dude who's just like, I don't think this guy was first ballot worthy, even though I know he was worthy of being there, so I'm going to vote no the first time because I'm crotchety and old. Like, you just
Yeah.
get people like that who just have their own weird agenda. Someone's like from Philly will be like, I got to vote Embiid because Embiid is underappreciated. So instead of putting him where I know he really deserves, I'm going to vote him first team just so he gets some. There's just people who have those kinds of things. So I get it. And yeah, I kind of feel like probably most voters do something stupid. Or have some weird agenda, like every once in a while. It's not the same guy doing the same stupid thing over and over and over again. Like the Philly guy who voted Embiid this year is probably really great the 10 previous years, but this one hit him in his blind spot. So, it's fine, but I agree clearly Davis is deserving, and the 96% still shows that.
So, second team was Giannis at forward, Russell Westbrook at guard, DeMar DeRozan at guard, Joel Embiid at center, and then the other was LaMarcus Aldridge at forward. But the third team is what I wanted to get your opinion on. Two Minnesota Timberwolves made third team All-NBA. Karl-Anthony Towns at center, Jimmy Butler at forward, guard, Paul George, Steph Curry, and Victor Oladipo round out third team. So Chris Paul was left out, Rudy Gobert, Kyrie Irving, Ben Simmons, Al Horford, and that was probably, the guys who were basically left off. How shocked were you that two Minnesota Timberwolves made third team All NBA, one and two, and number one and number two? Isn't that a pretty damning statement about how you know, you got two guys that made all NBA and yet they were such an utter disappointment this season?
I don't know how they were another disappointment. I mean, it's like a bizarre thing to say. I know you predicted them to win like 40 games or 38 games or something. So they won like 33% more games than you anticipated. So they should be a raging success in your mind versus your expectations. So I'm even surprised you bring it up in that light. But regardless of that, I think, you know, they were a solid team. I don't know why you think that was odd. And they clearly only had those two guys really doing much for them. You know, I don't think they had, like, a lot of other talent on that group, really. So I kind of get it. Would I replace them? I don't know. You know, I think the only thing that's a little interesting is, you know, Jimmy Butler missed a good chunk of time. And some of the other guys who got left off, you know, clearly seemed to get left off to me, possibly due to injuries and not playing as much. So, you know, I think maybe that's a little interesting, but I think Butler is deserving. You know, it really comes down to when you get to the third team, you know, you get to the first team, there's only a few guys who really deserve it, right? Like, you know who the best guys in the league were. By the time you get to the guys who are 11 through 15, the gap between 11 and 20 is much smaller than the gap between, like, 1 and 6. And so you can have all these arguments, and it becomes very close and difficult to kind of parse who is there and who isn't there, and it becomes much more of a barroom fun topic to debate those 13 guys. I agree.
Well, here's something I did want to wrap this up. Two guys that got votes. One vote for Porzingis, which I don't know who voted for him. Again, we got to find this
New York guy. Clearly,
yeah. But regardless, you can't vote for a guy that basically missed half the year. And then number two, Trevor Ariza got a vote. I love Trevor Ariza. There's no way he's made all NBA. I mean, my gosh, I have no idea who was, you know, another guy, Steven Adams, got a vote. I mean, come on. You know, one of the most disappointing teams around, and did he get two votes? He got two votes. How's that? How you like them apples?
Well, they wouldn't get my vote.
Yeah.
But it does remind me, like, not that it's related in any way, but it does bring back some fond memories of the year that Joakim Noah was like fourth in MVP voting. I think it was. Is that right? It was like fourth or fifth.
He made first team All-NBA.
He was playing center, point guard, and had all the triple doubles.
Yes.
And you know, so sometimes the voting can be weird. Like, no way, Joakim Noah is like your fifth best guy in the NBA.
Well, that year was a great year, though. That was the year that we lost. We lost to the Wizards in round one, another disappointing exit. But he was hurt in that playoffs. He had a fantastic season that year. I think, was that the second year Rose got hurt? Was that right? Am I recalling this correctly?
Yeah, I thought that was the year we beat Brooklyn in the playoffs, actually, and then lost in the second round.
It's hard to
connect all the dots. Like 3 years ago, you remember this like fantastic regular season, and you remember the postseason separately, and it's hard to connect which was which. But either way, it was the year Rose was completely out.
Yeah,
that happened, and so that was the year he tore the meniscus. And I thought that was the same year that we beat Brooklyn, but
yeah.
I could be mistaken. You know, we need a fact checker in the background, but you know, too bad we don't got one.
We'll get it for the next show. Let's get a little bit into the draft here. So there's a lot of talk about, a lot of suggestions, let's put it that way. I don't know if is there actually any real proof that the Bulls would even consider this. Would you consider moving back from 7 in a trade with the Clippers to get, what is it, 12 and 13? Is that where they're at?
I believe that's what it is, yeah.
And would you consider that move?
I think it's interesting. The question that was first posed when I saw someone ask about it was, would you give up 7 and 22 for 12 and 13? And I think you could probably make the case that you just don't even need to give up 22 if you get 12 and 13.
Correct.
Though, honestly, if you get 12 and 13, maybe you don't really need 22 anyway, because what are you going to do with three rookies? I mean, you can't have too much of a logjam, so if it became a sticking point, 22 really isn't all that valuable, so I'd be willing to hand it over. And I kind of did some research on this, and I was looking at, you know, where guys are picking and how successful they are, and so I was kind of taking it in ranges. So I was sort of comparing, like, the guy's taking 7 through 9 to the guy's taking like 12 through 14, and just seeing, you know, how good the players were in that range. And overall, it was pretty even. If you had 12 and 13 versus just that one pick, and you had a smart GM who picked like the right guy, you know, at that, it was in that range, that you would do about the same either way. So I thought it was actually pretty fair value. In this draft, where you've got a lot of like high upside players, I think,
and
even when you get down to 12, 13 range, a lot of high upside players, and even in our range, guys who have a pretty good amount of risk with them, I think I would make the trade and take the two guys at 12 and 13. It's a little hard for me to say that only because I think there's more upside just at 7 if you pick the right guy. But I would be more confident of getting an all-star if I had 12 and 13, and I'd be more confident if I had to bet on a superstar at 7. So I guess maybe now when I say it that way, I think I have to stay with 7. So I've just talked myself out of it.
Yeah, I'm shocked you'd even consider it. I think this draft, there's like 8 potential. I think there's a clear delineation. I know some people would throw Trae Young into this top group. I have him out. I don't think he's in there. I would actually put Miles Bridges, in addition to Mikal Bridges, in the top tier. So you can maybe argue, you know, 8, depending how you feel about Bamba, 9. But after that, I think there's a clear drop-off, right? And I know there's some people who love Knox, and there's some other players that are beloved, but I think those guys aren't in the same tier as some of these guys. So I think it'd be a massive mistake if they drop back. I'd even like them to move up if it costs 22. Like, to me, to move up to like 4 or 5 if Jaren Jackson Jr. falls, I would
do
that.
You're not moving up for 22. You couldn't even move up to 6 for 22.
Okay.
Let alone 4 or 5. So that's, throw that out there.
You can't get it. You've been hearing all this stuff about Doncic potentially falling now. There's a lot of talk in the last week that he could be falling. And I think that's an interesting topic about potentially moving up, some team moving up to get him, because a lot of people feel that he is, you know, could be the elite, really.
You just told me last week that you thought this dude was a huge bust, and now you want to move up for him?
I don't think I said he was a huge bust. I don't want to move up for him. I'm just saying, how dare you call out my actual words from last week. I don't feel he's a huge bust. That's a big mistake. I think if he develops a three-point shot, he's got clearly great skills, offensive skills. I think he's always going to have a problem on the defensive end. But I think he's got the potential to be, you know, a very good player if he can develop that three-point shot. He doesn't have it now. So that's a big if, right? Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. I watch a lot of his highlight tape, watch a lot of his tape. To me, one of the best things he does is this step-back jumper, which he'll, you know, that he makes occasionally, but they don't show the 7 out of 10 times he's missing it. So, I think that guy, everything depends on how that outside three-point shot develops for him. Right now it sucks. But, you know, you've seen guys improve. I mean, Mikal Bridges was a 28% three-point shooter as a 19-year-old, and he's, you know, 43 now. That doesn't happen without a great work ethic. But I do feel like that guy might be, you know, at 4, that's a bargain, right? Or 5, that I you got to look at him.
Only a bargain if he's good.
Right.
And here's what I'll say, and this kind of speaks to both of your points. You said you feel like, you know, there's like the draft is this many players deep.
Yes.
Every year, someone will say the draft is X players deep. And every year, half the dudes they thought were in that group end up sucking. And there'll be 3 dudes who weren't in that group who were picked later who ended up being good. Or maybe the entire draft class as itself just blows.
Yeah.
And there's no one good. So I guess it's like I try to talk myself out of thinking that there's this like linear drop-off point. Because it's never true. We misanalyze the draft so much every year anyway. And just if you just go back and look over the last 10 years, there in good drafts, there are all-stars available at 12 and 13. And not because there's 12 or 13 all-stars, but because like 7 picks of them will be not so great. And there will be good guys. So like I said, when I looked at it, there's you got guys like Giannis is there, like 15.
Jimmy Butler.
Paul George. Kawhi Leonard. More like 11 picks.
Yeah, but that's
Kawhi Leonard is another guy. Jimmy Butler was another guy. I mean, there's just like a lot of guys who are, clearly no one was looking at Jimmy Butler at 15, though, but clearly yeah. there are a lot of guys who've become really good who are available. And so, you know, I just try and back my way out of thinking like there's this point where, oh, if I was only one pick higher, my value would be so much better. It feels that way, but in actuality, it's almost certain that that's not the case. If you pick the right guy, your value is going to be really good because there will always be bargains that make it through because people just screw up the draft. And so Doncic, to me, is a guy who could easily just not be that good. You know, like it'll feel like he's a great value at six or something, but if he's the next guy who's just not quite athletic enough and isn't quite good enough a shooter, and he's just Ricky Rubio out there with like great handles and great vision, but can't shoot, then what does that really get you? Especially out of a guy who probably projects to play, I don't know, tweener between shooting guard and small forward. He's not a point guard. I mean, so where does that fit? Is he a guy who can play off the ball? Like, there's like real questions for me about how he's going to translate into the NBA, even though he's amazing. I mean, he won the EuroLeague MVP at 19. It's like obviously an amazing talent, but I just don't know how his game translates to the NBA, and it seems like there might be some struggle points for him.
No doubt.
There's if he's there at questions. 7, I'm going to take him, but I'm not moving up for him.
So I do disagree a little bit with your statement about you'll find these guys at 12, 13. The vast majority of all-stars are top 10 picks. Like, if we go through the let's just look through the rosters here. DeMarcus Cousins, top 10. Davis, Durant, Irving, LeBron James.
Okay, do this, though. Get rid of, like, the top one. Get rid of all the number ones in the draft. And, like, all of a sudden, like, the odds of an all-star at 12 are not in 13. Are not half what they are at 7.
I don't know if that's
so. Like the Bulls are at 7. They're not at 1. They're not 2. They're not 3. So all these guys you named are not where the Bulls are picking. If you pick all the All Stars that are available between like 7 and 11, and all the ones that are available between say like 12 and 16 or whatever to make the numbers work out, and I don't think you would find that your odds are twice as high at 7. Because you're basically get one pick versus two. So they're definitely higher. You're definitely much more likely to get an all-star at 7. And Sherman has been, I think, a particularly blessed pick, if I'm not mistaken. A lot of good players
Curry
have come
was
at
there.
7.
Yeah, Curry was there.
Yeah, but I think your odds are still, that two picks is still not going to be half the odds. So
yeah. But, I mean, just still looking at the roster, most of these guys are picked top 10. I mean, John Wall. Who was injured.
Okay, again, John Wall, not available at 7. Name guys
Kevin
available
Love?
At 7 or later.
Kevin Love. Kevin Love was picked at, was it 9?
I thought he was 5.
Maybe it's earlier than that. Yeah, you're probably right. Paul George was actually later, 10.
11.
Or 11, okay.
10? 10 or 11, yeah, somewhere around there.
Victor Oladipo, top 3. Porzingis, 4. John Wall. Westbrook was a 4, I believe. Kemba Walker, don't recall.
He was. I think he might have been a little bit later.
Where was DeRozan?
Anyway, we don't need to bore people trying to go through the website now.
You're right.
it's fine. Yeah. There's some good guys at 7, but really the best guys are usually in the 1 to 4 range. And once you start sliding past that, you catch those guys every once in a while. You catch your Steph Curry. The guys who are available at 7 are the guys who had like some serious question mark, and then through their hard work, they answered that question.
Yeah.
Right. Like, if the guys who are like the can't miss lock guys are always at number 1 or number 2 if there's two of those guys in the same draft. And if it's a super deep draft, you might get to like 4 of those guys who are really great in a draft, like, say, the LeBron James draft.
Yeah.
But, once you get past that, it's guys who are able to answer questions and make big improvements to their game. And so you got to pick the guy who you feel is going to be able to do that.
So, about the draft, the Bulls are 7 right now. I don't think we did this in the previous show, and I'd just like to get your opinion right now. The 4 likely guys left: Bamba, Carter Jr., Mikal Bridges. Who's the other guy that most likely there? Let's say Miles Bridges. Michael Porter Jr. Out of those 4, not Miles, those 4, who do you like the best if the Bulls are at 7?
And so clearly not all of them are going to be there. One of Bamba or Porter is not going to be there.
Okay.
And maybe neither will be there, and we'll get Trae Young instead, which
I
would not be excited about.
Yeah, don't make me nauseous. Yeah, let's just pretend, though, they're all there. Who do you like? Like, let's say you can pick from that group.
If they're all there, of the guys, the Bulls, I'm going to say, we're going to assume the top four are Bagley, Jackson Jr.,
Doncic.
Doncic and Ayton. So those guys are gone for sure. And then so you now have to rank Young, Bamba, Porter, Bridges, and Carter. I think that off the cuff with that ranking, I am going to put Trae Young in the not going to take him area, Mikal Bridges in the not going to take him area, and I'm going to be choosing between, I'll take probably Bamba, Porter, Carter. But Porter to me is a question mark. It entirely depends on what he does in the workout with the Bulls and what his medical stuff looks like. So if the Bulls pass on Porter, I'll just assume they saw something they didn't like in that. You know, because you got no other real history on him.
Yes.
So that's one that I don't think a fan can really judge. If the Bulls take him, I'm going to feel satisfied that they felt comfortable with what they saw. If they don't take him, I'm going to feel satisfied that they probably saw some stuff and said, nope, I don't feel comfortable. Because with him, what I mentioned that on my show, I mentioned if you take Porter Jr. and he's good for like 4 years, because people say, well, even if he hasn't been back, if he's good for like 5 years, it's still a great pick. No, that's actually the worst thing that can happen. That's like what happened to the Bulls with Derrick Rose. It's what happened with the Trailblazers with Brandon Roy. They're great for like 4 years. You sign them to this extension, they get hurt. And then now you got dead money for 5 years.
Right, right.
And that's actually like the worst thing that can happen to your team, because you now are just handicapped with an anchor around your leg for 5 years. So you really have to feel comfortable when you see his medical stuff that he's a guy who's going to last for like 9 years. That this is going to really be something that just, this is in the past. It's not going to impact his future. And I don't know how comfortable you could feel with that. But yeah, I think you have to have that level of comfort if he's not Porter Jr.
Yeah. So that's great. So let's wrap this up with this one. And I always hear you can't judge a draft till 3 years in. So I want to look at the 2015 draft. And I'm going to throw some names at you for the top seven. And then I'm going to tell you.
This should be entertaining.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you the Bulls took at 22. Karl Anthony Towns was taken number one, obviously a home run. D'Angelo Russell, number two to the Lakers. Obviously,
seems like a bust. F-minus? I mean, I don't know. Bust, yeah.
At two? You know what I mean? He might be an okay player, but at two, you'd like something better than that. Okafor.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okafor, three. Bust. Porzingis, home run. Mario Hezonja, Orlando, number four, five. Oh, my God. Willie Cauley-Stein, six. Emmanuel Mudiay, seven. I mean, is this draft not like one of the worst you've ever heard? Stanley Johnson, Detroit at eight. Frank Kaminsky at nine. Justice Winslow at 10. Out of all those guys I mentioned, Bobby Portis was taken 22nd. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'd take Portis ahead of every one of those, but Towns and Porzingis.
I don't think you can argue that.
I think some people might argue Winslow ahead of him.
I don't think so.
I agree with you, not Doug. I agree with you.
Not after this year. Maybe last year. You just still argued the upside of Winslow.
Yeah.
I don't think. 3 years in, no. No. I think you look at Winslow and you're like, nope.
Doug, do you recall for this draft how you felt about it going in? I don't. And I don't remember how you felt going into this draft. Did you have the feeling that this was a bad draft? Do you remember what they were saying? That there wasn't a lot of talent in that draft? I don't recall.
I don't think people thought this was a good draft. I recall people saying that this was a draft that was and people define good draft by how many stars are in it.
Yes.
And how top heavy it is.
Right.
And I remember people saying this was a deep draft, not a top heavy draft.
Yeah.
And I think it turned out that way. Because I think besides Portis, I want to say there were some other pretty good picks.
Devin Booker.
In the teens and in 20s. There's like a lot of guys that kind of became pretty solid players.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, Butler's not a star player by any stretch. But I mean, he's like a solid player. And I think there's been a good amount of solid players in that draft if you look later in the draft.
No doubt. I
But I
mean,
could be wrong.
Miles Turner was 11. He's, I think, a good player. Devin Booker at Phoenix was 13th. Campaign at 14. I mean, oh. Terry Rozier at 16. So you're right. It was a little bit deeper. Jerian Grant is was it picked by Washington at 19, and then Bobby Portis at 22. Larry Nance Jr. is still in the league. But
Yeah, I take
overall.
it back. That's not a. I take it back. That's just a lousy draft.
Yeah.
Wolves did a great job. Yeah, I must have been thinking of one of the other ones. That's a pretty weak sauce right there.
I think if you
So.
redraft that, I think Bobby Portis is in the top six. And it's amazing that, the Bulls still, they get criticized for not being able to draft well. They've hit homer after homer in the 20s. And
Yeah, anyone who criticizes the Bulls for not drafting well is just not paying attention.
yeah.
I mean, they really aren't. Even, it's like they're hung up on Tyrus Thomas and Doug McDermott. And, like, I get it. The Bulls whiff with those two picks. The Tyrus one, I think most people understand because it actually goes against their philosophy. They took a guy who had, like, ridiculous athleticism and upside and lousy character. And, that's just something they typically would not do, right? Like, they always draft, like, the safe guy.
Yeah.
And they went away from the safe guy, and boy, they probably thought we're never doing that again after that, because they missed out on LaMarcus Aldridge and ended up with Tyrus, so maybe they'll be forever conservative. But I mean, they've really done a really bang up job, otherwise. I think there's a couple picks you could argue, maybe Tony Snell. There are some other guys around him that you could have taken instead, but I would still say Tony Snell has had a solid NBA career for a guy who has picked 20. I don't think you can complain about his career.
No doubt.
Denzel
No.
Valentine, people, maybe aren't so high in him, but look at that draft. Denzel Valentine might be a top five guy in that draft. It's like
Agree.
just so terrible. So, I just don't think they've done a bad job. They've actually done a truly outstanding job getting guys like Portis, Gibson, Nurkic, and Butler
Butler, yeah.
in the 20s, and that's it's like four hits out of not that many shots in the 20s. I mean, like, really, you think about guys they've missed in the 20s, and it comes down to Markquis Teague, and I think maybe he's 29 or 30, something like that.
29,
But
yep.
other than that, they've really done just an outstanding job late in the draft. I mean, really, really great. And then they've taken the Sheik and Duhon, a couple of other guys like that who've been pretty solid in the second round. I know the Bulls almost always sell their second rounders, so they actually have very, very few second round picks that they've made. But even of the ones they've made, they've found guys who've been able to stick for a few years and, at least fill in some minutes. So I think they've been really, really one of the better teams in late drafting.
Doug, it's always enjoyable to chat Bulls with you. I'm so looking forward to the draft night. Do we have a full house yet? Is there any more room left for the listening audience if you want to participate?
There might be, I even though I've kind of said I cap it at 40, if people beg and want to come, I probably would let more people in. I think we're probably around 40 people right now signed up, but since a few people always not show, we might be able to sneak a couple people in there if they want to hit you up.
Yeah, I mean, this, anybody who's listening, this is truly a life-changing experience. You have probably the smartest
Oh my
access.
God.
You have access to the smartest group of Bulls fans, all within a 100-yard radius. You should come. I mean, you can hear comments, brilliant comments from myself, from Doug, from the Ball guys. All these great Bulls fans are attending this event. Definitely go. And it's always it's a great time. It's something I'll never forget. Every year I go, I love it, man. And even in the Doug McDermott draft, which was an utter embarrassment for me, as I was the only one cheering. And in retrospect, probably I was wrong on that one. It was still
Probably, huh?
well, he's still out there. You never know. He might turn things around. It's always fun. And like last year, I mean, the audible groan when we took Lauri Markkanen, and I don't care who they draft this year, unless it's Trae Young, I'm not saying a word because they've done this so many times where we've been disappointed with the pick, and in most cases it's turned out A-okay. Notably, you remember the Taj Gibson pick? You remember that when we were all dying for them to? Oh, who was it that we wanted them to take? It was
DeJuan Blair.
Dwan
Called
Blair.
him called him Taj, not Dewan Blair Gibson, for like 3 months.
There you go.
And then all of a sudden,
how did that one turn out?
We found out, Taj Gibson's actually pretty great.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Dewan Blair is probably playing in like the Puerto Rican League or something now. I mean,
With no ACLs. Exactly. No ACLs in his knee. All right, brother, man. Always enjoyable. Looking forward to next week as we get a little bit more into the draft even further as we approach this truly historic, important day. All the best to you, my friend. Have a happy Memorial Day to you and your family, and can't wait to talk next week.
Can't wait.
All right, brother. Have a good one, my man.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.